Welcome to the Art of Climate Dialogue Stories from Iowa, produced by myself, Vivian M. Cook, and the Eco Theater Lab. And welcome to today's conversation with farmer, artist, and founder of Mustard Seed Community Farm, Alice McGarry.
When I felt like I didn't have anything wise to say, I went out to check on the greenhouse, on the little plants in this wild wind and bright sun, thinking about rural regeneration. I was thinking, remember that we love this place. This place, big and small, right here. This land and these people and creatures and water and soil. Our wider community extending slowly wider to the whole world. It centered me in my mixed upness, a hope for myself, for my community, for rural people everywhere, for all of us on this planet. To remember that we love is to remember why, but also how.
Addressing climate change is urgent, but in order to move toward action, we first have to find ways to talk about climate change with one another. The Art of Climate Dialogue, Stories from Iowa, is a podcast series featuring 13 conversations with artists, farmers, community-engaged researchers, and community organizers and activists who have all used arts and storytelling strategies to talk about climate change and agriculture. Through this podcast, they generously share these strategies so that listeners can implement them in their own communities. I'm Vivian, and I invite you to explore the Art of Climate Dialogue with me. As we enter into these conversations around climate action, sustainable agriculture, and community-engaged arts in Iowa, the Eco Theater Lab and I want to first recognize that Indigenous nations have been leaders in such conversations for centuries and continue to be today. Iowa now occupies the homelands of Native American nations to whom we owe our commitment and dedication. Iowa is now situated on the homelands and trading routes of the Iowa, Meskwaki, and Sauk, Oto, Omaha, Ihonctowan, and Santee. And because history is complex and time goes far back beyond memory, we also acknowledge the ancient connections of many other Indigenous peoples here. The history of broken treaties and forced removal that dispossess Indigenous peoples of their homelands was and is an act of colonization and genocide that we cannot erase. And as a result, Indigenous ecosystems within Iowa have suffered from extraction, degradation, and unsustainable agricultural practices, contributing to the ongoing climate crisis. Understanding and addressing these injustices is critical as we work toward climate dialogue, action, and justice in our communities. My thanks to podcast interviewees Shelley Buffalo, enrolled member of the Meskwaki tribe, Lance Foster, enrolled member and tribal historian of the Iowa tribe of Kansas and Nebraska, and Sakawa Zenobis, Plains Cree Soto of the George Gordon First Nation, for their collaboration in developing this acknowledgement. Thank you. Alice McGarry is a farmer, fiddler, potter, weaver, quilter, mentor, and community facilitator. She's excited about beauty, justice, community, and being outside. She lives and works at the Mustard Seed Community Farm, which is an 11-acre diversified cooperative farm in northeastern Boone County near the Iowa Creek.
Welcome, Alice, to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for wanting to talk to me.
Of course. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while, so this is wonderful. So we, at the beginning of this episode, we just listened to some incredible fiddling of yours, and then to a short excerpt to Remember That We Love This Place that you wrote for a recent multimedia article you and the Mustard Seed Community Farm team published in the Rootstock Journal. The overall piece was titled Growing Kin, Voices from Mustard Seed Community Farm. And at the end of your excerpt, you say that you have a hope for yourself, for your community, for rural people everywhere, for all of us on this planet. To remember that we love is to remember why, but also how. From what I understand, this love for each other, for the land, for envisioning a future that could be different, informs all of the work that y'all do at Mustard Seed. So I want to start by having you tell us a little bit more about Mustard Seed Community Farm and its history.
Sure. Yeah, so I am part of the Mustard Seed Community Farm. I am one of the founders of this farm. We've been farming as a group of enthusiastic, idealistic, kind of scruffy people for around 15 years now. And we're a little farm northwest of Ames. And yeah, there's a lot to talk about it. But we're just trying to grow food in a cooperative, ecological way. We're trying to, yeah, just in little basic daily things, reimagine our food system and our economic system and the way we work together with the land. And then, yeah, we're trying to grow delicious, healthy, beautiful food to share with whoever needs it.
That's wonderful. And I've tasted some of that delicious, wonderful food, actually. So it's pretty
fantastic.
And who all is engaged in Mustard Seed's work?
Yeah, well, it's a hard one to say. We, from the start, have had a little core team, and that team has shifted over the years about who's, you know, as people maybe graduate from school or have more children. And anyway, so as people's schedules change, but there's always been a team of 5 to 12 people who are kind of at the core making some of the main decisions in consensus and usually working at least once a week on the farm. But then, yeah, we have a lot of people who are just coming also maybe once a week to help harvest and taking food home. We have people who just come out once for a fun party or for an education event or to volunteer. And then we just have so many partners that we are sharing food with and families that are sharing our food with other people. So it's quite hard to necessarily know what is the exact extent of our community.
That seems like a good problem to have, actually. And in that article that y'all wrote, then part of the title says growing kin. What do y'all mean by growing kin when we're talking about community?
Yeah, I think this is also one of the core ideas behind our art show that we just had. Also, just this idea that, yeah, that maybe at the root of all of our problems is this exploitation of other people or of our planet or the resources or our land. And this just idea that things are things to be used for whatever I want, you know, for growth of our economy or for my own greed or for competition. And that really, that we are trying to completely turn that upside down, and that really thinking of everything as a fellow, as kin, as part of our family, as something, whether it's the little microscopic things in the soil or just our places or every other person.
Right.
Yeah, it's just beautiful and important and sacred and as important as me, and I don't need to quite understand it, but yeah, that we're building relationships with kin.
That's really wonderful. And it seems like, and from what I know about the farm, that this idea of growing kin does connect to the work that y'all do facilitating climate dialogue through your work on the farm and the different events you hold, education or parties or whatever it might be. So can you talk a little bit more about how Mustard Seed works to facilitate dialogue around climate change and climate action?
Yeah. The climate crisis is huge, mm-hmm. and affects everything. And I think everything that we do affects it. And so it's just an issue that is present at all times, mm-hmm. I guess. And, I think that we are trying to build a place. I was just talking to Zoe before this. I was like, yeah. What should I say to Vivian on the radio? And Zoe was saying, yeah, well, just that, that the farm is this place that we are creating a place where people can come together and discuss and learn and practice different ways of doing things that have to do with art, with creativity, mm-hmm. with climate, with social change.
This idea that it, because of the mission and values of Mustard Seed and the kind of work that you're doing, whether that's figuring out different ways to farm, figuring out different ways to be in community with one another that isn't exploitative, that from what I understand, that is all connected to the issues that are continuing to cause climate change and the solutions that we need to find to address it.
And I think that we are all trying to make those connections, mm-hmm. in our conversations with each other, in, talking about why we're doing the work we're doing, in the work that we're doing, in the art that we're doing, in the education, in the support for each other's activism. But yeah, it's hard to be like, this is the one thing that we're doing, and it's so great. I feel like it's a lot of little things, and I hope that they matter.
But I think that's helpful to hear, especially, I assume, for many of our listeners and for me talking to you. I think for many of us, especially those who are involved in conversations about climate change a lot or are thinking about climate change a lot, it does feel like a really massive problem, and it can feel hard to know what to do about it. That it is affecting so many parts of our lives and we're affecting it, and like, where can we even start? So this idea of it's a lot of little things that contribute to addressing climate change and climate justice and all of its different facets, I think that's really helpful to hear, that it starts with little things, little actions, little conversations that we're having with each other in community.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like, not to be like, well, we can all change a light bulb and that's going to save the world. but, our personal choices, sure, are important. But yeah, and then like how we engage with each other, mm-hmm. and then how we engage with systems and corporations and governments, I think all those things matter. But I think also we need a lot of cultural shifts.
Yeah.
And we have the power to make cultural shifts. It's hard sometimes to see that we have that power. But as artists, as people, as a person making a podcast, you have power to help shift the conversation and help shift people's mindsets.
Mm-hmm. And figuring out ways to create spaces where we help people know that they have that power and that we have that power together.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's hard to have that power all by yourself.
Right. So we've talked about some of this before, especially how we as a society, in order to build community and then build that power together, we have to invest in artistic and creative spaces that are inspirational and hopeful, and that these kinds of spaces will help us build relationships, community, and opportunities to practice different ways of living and farming and interacting with each other. So can you tell us a little bit more specifically about how art, storytelling, and creativity play a role in Mustard Seed's work?
So it does feel helpful to be like, we just had an art show.
Yeah.
I can feel like we're more clearly engaged in the art world than it sometimes seems like we are. I do think that just our creative efforts to make the place where we live beautiful, fruitful, inviting, you know, and the creation of our systems are also, I think, for me, part of that mm-hmm. art and the creation of events. And yeah, I'm very uncomfortable being like right now talking on your thing. Like, I really like to be the person who is helping to create an opportunity for other people to talk to each other or to facilitate people's engagement with nature and with work. But here I am talking to you because I care about these things a ton. Yeah, so I think this is important for me right now as an artist, is helping create positive imagination and hope. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's been really important for me, and it is really important for me to speak really honestly about terrible things. That's always been important to me, but I also think it's become more and more aware to me that lots of other people are more overwhelmed by terrible things than I am. And so sometimes people can't engage if you're just like talking about terrible things. I feel like that people are very overwhelmed mm-hmm. by, it is overwhelming. There's so much despair, there's so much loss, there's so much grief and change and frightening things that we're right in the middle of. And then when we look forward or even look back, like just the loss is so heartbreaking. And I think we need to make time and space to feel those feelings and to honor that and to also just be, to appreciate the beauty that we have and like just the glory and the amazement of the world. But I think that, there's so much hopelessness and fear. And like often people will just want to deny, they want to turn away. They don't know what to do. And then I think, we have these corporations and we have this government that's like, just like, let's avoid it. Let's push it down the road. Let's not make any changes. And I think that like there's this overall idea that we have to sacrifice. We're going to have to sacrifice all of our good things. And especially the people with power, I feel like are like, we don't want to sacrifice. We don't want to let go of our power. We don't want to let go of our money. You know, we don't want to let go of the comfort and the ease of our fossil fuels. And so one thing I just want people to maybe start thinking about is that, like, some of those sacrifices might be fun.
Right, right.
They might not be that bad. Like, actually, some of those things that we're afraid to let go of aren't actually giving us joy. They're not giving us connections or, like, meaning. We could let go of some things that aren't actually making anyone happy except for the really rich people and maybe aren't even making them happy. They're just making them rich. But like, right. And we could have amazing things. Like we could have wonderful, beautiful communities and we could have a beautiful planet and beautiful abundance of food and biodiversity. And we could have loving, caring relationships and we could know our neighbors. And like there actually could be a million changes that we make that would be good for the climate and they would be fantastic.
Right. And a lot of other ways too.
Yeah. So we don't just have mm-hmm. to be afraid all the time. So anyway, that's something that seems important to me. And I feel like that's something that we try to do on the farm is just be like, actually, we can grow food and harvest food and share food and work together and work hard. And it's beautiful. And we can be loving and we can talk about hard things. And it's caring and I don't know, and we can, we can have
parties and art shows and
right parties and art shows, and we can maybe have no electricity sometimes, and it's like people go camping. It's fun to go camping. You could do that every day, and it's still pretty fun.
Right. You've also talked about how practicing artistic and crafting skills, which y'all do at the farm by inviting people to artistic events and doing mm-hmm. art showcases and all that, and even just farming in and of itself mm-hmm. as an artistic and crafting skill, that's one way to demonstrate that hope and beauty of what things could be. Can you talk more about how practicing those skills can help connect us more deeply with the land and each other?
Yeah. This idea for me that it does connect to this idea that we're all amazing, we're all important, yeah, and that we're all creative and we mm-hmm. all matter, and yeah, that we can all make things. We can solve problems. We don't just have to be consumers. Also, maybe that our joy and pleasure doesn't just come from buying things or consuming things, but actually creating things. And it might just be dinner that right. we create. But that act of imagining and making something happen and then making something happen with others, yeah, it's just really empowering that we all can do it. It's not just for some sort of special person.
I love how you talk about practicing those skills, especially in community with each other, as empowering, that it's not only the result itself of creating beautiful food and creating beautiful artwork and all of that, but the process that can give us confidence to pursue change in mm-hmm. these other systems mm-hmm. that we're a part of and maybe are worried about yeah. and feel like we need to change in some way, and that practicing those skills with each other can actually help give us the confidence and hope to pursue those changes in other parts of our lives, even yeah. if we're not at Mustard Seed.
Yeah. Like. I mean, I think that I see this a lot when there's younger people that work with us who have a ton to teach me and are amazing and are thinking about things I haven't thought about. But I feel like we've all been so indoctrinated into capitalism, into systems of power. Yeah, and it's just like hard sometimes to practice skills of equality, of, you know, revolution, of cooperation. And yeah, just so yeah, for sure, just practicing skills mm-hmm. sometimes can help us realize how caught we were in a different mm-hmm. system.
And that practicing different ways of being with each other, with the land, with everything around us, I guess that also can create habits that make the sacrifices that you were talking about earlier feel less like sacrifices mm-hmm. if we're just, yeah, practicing how to be in the world in different ways
yep.
than we thought were necessary.
Yep.
Maybe they're not. Can you describe a day at Mustard Seed where art and storytelling merged in some way with the farm's climate action efforts?
Well, this is what I will describe. So twice a week we have our harvest mornings, and I think it's just a fantastic time on the farm, and a lot of people come out to the farm for this, and we start in a circle, we start as a group, and this past year we've also been doing like stretches, so we've been going around, everybody introduces themselves, there's usually some new people, and they offer a stretch that we all do, and yeah, so if you're new, usually somebody else will volunteer to be your buddy. People might say, I'd like to lead the spinach harvest today. Mm-hmm. I've usually made a list beforehand of everything that we're going to harvest. And yeah, some people sign up to be leaders. And then, yeah, we have this 3-hour shift where people break up into teams and they go out to harvest different things. And we have a person in the pack house and a washer. And I guess what I'm describing is sort of a system that's in place twice a week. And people kind of know how to fit in. But I feel like at the beginning and at the end of this time, it is about all coming back together and, you know, and kind of honoring each person and what they want. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, yeah, we go out and harvest all the things. We bring them back. Everybody kind of passes messages to the packer and the washer. And anyway, then they go back out and do the next thing that's open on the list. And in the pack house, they're just making these beautiful boxes of really abundant, yeah, just like a lot of food
yeah.
In every box. And, you know, and they now our pack house folks are really organized and they're like writing people's names on and they're figuring out who's going to deliver which box when they go home. And then we gather, we ring the bell and we gather again as a big group. And this is my storytelling time. I don't know if this counts as storytelling.
Yes, but, love it.
So again, we go around, everybody says their name again. And then we have a time to share a rose, a bud, and a thorn, mm-hmm. And also any important information, like oh, somebody should weed the beets. I was harvesting the beets, and they really need weeding. Or like, there's a really weird bug. Does anybody know what this bug is? Yeah, and it's a time for people to share something new they learned. You know, they might share from their morning. They might share from their life. Sometimes people share really important things, like somebody in their family has passed away, or they're gonna have surgery. Sometimes it's just like, I saw a really cool caterpillar.
Yeah.
And you know, and the kids can share. And again, I feel like it's a really wonderful time of just honoring each person. Yeah. And then this past year, we've had flowers for everybody. So everybody goes and gets a box and, you know, gets a bouquet of flowers and goes home, and usually delivers food to somebody on the way home also. And how does it fit in with our climate act? I mean, I guess it just...
It seems integrated that, right. You know, with some of the other interviewees on this podcast series, then we've talked about the importance of, one, creating space for everyone to share their stories, even if it's small stories about the bug they found, mm-hmm. weeding, like something important or meaningful that's happened in their lives, that creates a space for everyone to be a part of the conversation. And when we're talking about something like climate change, when it feels so huge, I think sometimes people have to figure out how to connect with the issue in order to help mm-hmm. solve the issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, by figuring out what is their small connection point. How does their story relate to this larger story mm-hmm. of climate change, climate action? And in Mustard Seed's case, it seems like, you know, regenerative agriculture
right.
is climate action in and of itself.
Yes.
And these little moments for storytelling, for people to connect with each other, for there to be beauty in the boxes with the flowers or anything else, that those actually help people find ways to connect their lives.
Yeah.
With this larger community and goal.
I absolutely agree. I mean, we definitely do have events that are about specific issues, you know, where we come together to talk and discuss those issues. But I feel like that this, well, also on harvest days, lots of people have a lot of meaningful conversations out mm-hmm. in the fields as they're working. I'm usually kind of like jumping between teams. And mm-hmm. so, again, I'm feeling great that other people are having good conversations.
Right. You're a facilitator of that.
But yeah, I'm kind of facilitating it. I'm facilitating the vegetables. I guess that's all I've got.
No, thank you for painting that picture of what the environment feels like on a day of the farm, and that this climate dialogue that is, you know, the theme of this podcast is pretty integrated into everything you do. And these little moments for joy and hope and beauty and art help facilitate that integration. Mm-hmm. That it's not always an overwhelming conversation to be a part of.
Right.
But instead it's a conversation that people want to be a part of because it's ongoing. And everyone's practicing skills mm-hmm. together of how to take climate action in very small ways.
Yeah. And sometimes it feels like we are doing, like, I mean, there are definitely times where I'm like, we have no effect on anything in any way. But then, yeah, I mean, I also feel like people come back and they say things like, you know, I mean, I do feel like we're a really special place for a lot of people and have been a place where people's hearts and ideas have changed and where they've learned new skills and built really meaningful relationships. And I mean, people say things like, this is the first place I ever felt like people actually cared what I had to say, you know,
wow.
Which is like, you know, it's really surprising. And, you know, or just that, yeah, I don't know, just that it's like this place of joy and connection. So, yeah, I always hope that we have some effect. Yeah. Anyway, people have been affecting me, so I guess that's it's worth something.
Absolutely, and like you said, that we, in order to address something like climate change, we have to figure out where our power is. Mm-hmm. And that in some ways has to happen through community building.
Yeah.
Because, yes, everyone can make a difference, but there's a lot of, that's a big burden to put on any one person, is to be like, you go, you over there on your own,
right,
solve climate change, yeah, and you over there on your own solve climate change, that we have to figure out how to talk about it together and be together and, yeah, figure out how to change things together. Or it's
yes.
not going to happen.
Yes. Yeah. Find that balance. That's what, we all have power and we all matter, so we shouldn't give up, but we don't have all of it.
Yes.
We are not responsible for everything, so yeah. don't give up.
Right. So I do want to talk about the art show mm-hmm. that y'all just said, and you've alluded to it a couple times. So Mustard Seed community members recently opened an exhibit called Nest in Its Branches, a collaborative art show about mutual aid, ecology, justice, community. Can you tell us about the show?
Yeah, I feel really good about our art show. Yeah, so, well, you were there.
I was there at the opening.
It was
pretty fantastic.
I was really glad you showed up. That was fun. Yeah, so it was artwork. I had a bunch of really big quilts that I wanted to show, and this space that the Harvest Vineyard Church that let us use their really big lobby has a really big space for big artwork. So that was exciting. But yeah, I wish I had my list. I feel like there were 8-ish to 10-ish visual artists and 8-ish to 10-ish poets and musicians. And yeah, it was just, I'm at a loss for words.
Well, just the opening just happened a couple days ago. And yeah, I did get to go, which was being in that space with all of the artwork that Mustard Seed Community Farm volunteers, community members created and shared. Like it felt like a space that was all about sharing, mm-hmm. whether that was stories or food or artwork or conversations with each other. And the space was gorgeous, but it really felt like a space that was carefully created to build community, which I can imagine is what it feels like to be on the farm many days as well.
Yeah, that's sweet. That's good. Yeah, so me and Jen and Greta and Beamer and Lauren, we worked a lot. Well, and then the two folks from the church, Alicia and Amy, and we worked a lot for like actually 2 weeks to like get all that stuff up in that space. And
yeah.
We had so much artwork that we needed more hooks than the church had. Like we had to order more hooks for mm-hmm. their, for their hanging wires, and then they got delayed in the mail. And anyway, so it was a little adventure. It was like a lot of, it was a lot of stress, I guess, getting the art up. But I felt really, it was just a really fun mix of different, it was, fiber, it was weaving and quilts and painting and some drawing and, yeah, just like some really bright stuff. And I don't know, just was some photography, some knitting, and anyway, it was just a really fun mix. Yeah, and then I just felt like our poets and our musicians were really, really powerful. And yeah, I just was really touched by everything. And I just felt really grateful, I guess, just grateful to be part of this creative community and grateful for all the people who came
mm-hmm.
and all the conversations and the food.
And it did feel like how you just described a harvest day in terms of kind of bookending the experience with these moments for kind of touching base with each other and connection. I don't know, when my partner and I entered the space and there was someone there to greet us and give us a flyer that listed, all of the artists that were going to be showcasing and telling us kind of when the performances were going to take place. The person let us know that we can go have food, go see the artwork, talk with people. Performances would start soon. It was very generous and welcoming when we came in. And then eventually, after some conversations and just mingling with people, finding people we knew, which was all great, then we had this wonderful set of performances that ended with this group song.
Yeah.
That, you know, there wasn't a lot of pressure or anything like that to perform, which I wonder if some people listening might be like, what? You did a group song? What does that mean? You didn't expect to sing? But that's not how it felt at all. It was a bunch of people gifted us with their music and poetry. And then one of the community members went up and said, okay, now I'm going to teach you a song that I wrote myself and that everyone can join in to if you want. And then she taught each of us parts of the song and we all sang together. And it was kind of this, yeah, really wonderful ending.
Yeah.
That felt like we were intentionally connecting with each other.
Yeah, that was Solvay. Solvay taught us a gratitude song that she had written, and you know, with four parts plus once we like, and there was 80 people.
Yeah.
Some people singing this song together who had just learned it and were just learning four different parts and singing together. But it was simple but beautiful. And I, again, like, you know, I love community singing, and I love, you know, I'm an old-time musician and I play for dancing. And again, like, for me, much more fun than performing is this invitation, you know, and I love playing for dancing because then it's like, we're this little band that's playing together and you're dancing with us and we're all making this like really, yeah, really big experience together. And there's maybe a call or a call in. And yeah, so I just, for me, it's really rewarding to have art bring us together that way and kind of uplift us and transcend us or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said earlier, that everyone is creative in some way. You don't have to call yourself an artist, but that everyone has skills and stories that we can bring to these conversations, whether it's an overwhelming conversation or just sharing what's going well in our lives or whatever it might be. And that these little moments of invitation kind of remind people of that.
Yeah.
That you don't have to be an artist up here on the stage, but you can still not only listen to, but then be a part of this experience.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a metaphor for other things that the farm is doing too, it felt like, you know, that this really is for community. The exhibit title says that the art show is about mutual aid, ecology, justice, and community, which, as someone who went and was able to experience that artwork, then I saw in the art pieces themselves and the little descriptions of the art pieces next to each of them. But can you talk a little bit more about these themes and how you think the artwork and stories that were in the exhibit can help facilitate conversations about these topics?
Yeah. It goes back to what I said at the beginning, this idea that injustice between people and the, you know, the destruction of our planet is tied in to this idea of thinking of things as objects to be used, and that maybe the solutions to those problems, you know, are also tied in that idea that, yeah, that love and cooperation and equality seems, I don't know, equality seems so simple, I guess, but just, yeah, this, for me, I don't know, I feel like I'm always really cheesy, but just like, you know, like this like loving holiness or something, like that everything is not just my equal, but just like amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and that if those were maybe, you know, if those are the founding principles of my life and my choices, you know, what would that look like? You know, and then kind of celebrating how is the, you know, that show I think was partly like, how is the farm trying to live out these ideas, but also, you know, how can our world try to live out these ideas? Yeah, so this, I mean, mutual aid, just this idea, again, of not like necessarily like, I'm rich and I'm going to help you, poor person, but more like everybody has something to offer and everybody needs something, and that like we all need to be helping each other. We all need to be accompanying each other. And yeah, and that, again, yeah, so again, like that family, that kinship, and then, yeah, just like I think that in a sense when you look at the, I mean, the natural world is, it can be brutal and terrible, but it's also really beautiful and really diverse and really interwoven. Yeah, so just kind of thinking about how we could take some examples from ecology, you know, of how maybe human beings could interact with the world in a little more balanced way, a little more humble way. It's just like one part of a much bigger, glorious puzzle. Or I don't know if puzzle is not the right word. So I don't know if that makes sense. But yeah, just kind of that was kind of the idea of how justice and ecology and mutual aid. And what's the other one that was in there?
And community, I think.
And community. Yeah. You know, how those all tie together with the farm. Yeah, and just one more thing I'll say about that, because I feel like I had some, like, these giant quotes in there, and I feel like maybe it's not totally clear how they fit into the theme sometimes. But I think for me also with quilting is very fun for me, but also it's just making a really big thing out of a lot of little pieces of things.
Yeah.
And I think that for me that's a lot of what community is like and what ecology is like. And, you know, it's just that all these little pieces might not obviously seem to fit together, but sometimes when you step back, you're like, whoa, that's beautiful. Or like, maybe that pattern doesn't totally make sense, but like, it is a really beautiful thing when you step back a little bit. So
can you tell us more about the two quilt pieces? Or you might have more in there.
Yeah, I have.
About the quilt pieces that you had, and a couple of them at least, they were directly tied to conversations about climate change and your experiences of climate change on the farm.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had four quilts in there, and I think two of them were more directly tied to climate change. One was a storm at sea traditional pattern, and the other one was a broken dishes traditional pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that the storm at sea one, I think, it's a pattern I love because it's just like squares and rectangles and diamonds, but it ends up being really, when you step back, there's like a lot of motion and it's kind of wild, like a storm at sea. And the colors I used were a lot brighter than the traditional. They're not quite, they're more like the colors maybe on a storm radar. So that was kind of in my mind a little bit too, just sort of like you know, I feel like the reason I make visual art sometimes is because I can't really talk about what I'm trying to say.
That makes total sense.
You know,
too.
It's like these ideas, I feel like they do connect and I can't quite say it in words.
But you talked about in your artist statement that went next to the pieces, how the quilts for you connected to like what has happened with the derechos in Iowa and resilience.
Yeah, so the other piece was the broken dishes one, and I feel like that's a little more clear what was going on in that one, I think. The square is called Broken Dishes, and then it's a whole quilt of these broken dishes squares put together. And then over the top, when you quilt, you make like stitching on top of it to hold all the layers together. And so I drew this giant picture on top of it. It's hard to see, so I put a little sketch next to you so you could see what was going on. But so we had had two derechos on the farm in the past 15 years. And so it was a story about the first derecho that we experienced, that I've experienced in my lifetime, but also the first I experienced on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And the destruction that it caused and how all of our dishes were broken. And then how we had another derecho just a couple years ago across the whole state, basically, that was extremely destructive. But by that time, we had had a lot more practice with extreme weather events. And so that we did not have We were not surprised by that storm. We did not have as much destruction. We had much better systems in place. Yeah, so it was speaking about how, in some sense, we are adjusting to the extreme weather events that have been happening across the world, but also kind of how tragic it is that we are adjusting to these things. And I don't think that, I mean, we can't just keep adjusting. Maybe we can. I mean, we might have to live underground to be able to keep adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it was a story about learning how to survive climate change, but also just a sadness, I guess, about, and a fear about weather. I definitely, being a farmer and living in the country, I definitely do have fear about weather.
Mm-hmm. And looking at those pieces too, I mean, you talked about wanting to do it and this giant lobby, because some of the pieces, including your quilts, are huge.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something powerful about walking in and seeing all these beautiful, colorful quilts all around this huge space. And you're drawn to them, and then there is this deeper story that you've put right next to them too that mm-hmm. has you engage more deeply with the quilt itself and the artistry of it, but then also the story that I think connects a lot of people mm-hmm. in Iowa and beyond.
Yeah.
About what we're dealing with and what does resilience mean, but then what does also mitigation mean?
Yes.
And
yes.
what is the necessity for mitigation because of this sadness about feeling the need for constant adaptation mm-hmm. and how we have to find that balance.
Yeah, it was a huge storm and not many people died, but I mean, when you look around the world,
right?
I mean, there's so much destruction, but so many people are dying and so many people are losing their homes and so many people are losing their places, like their ways of living. And mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, the scale is, yeah, what we're going to have to do to adapt is huge, but also we could change what we're doing.
Right, right.
We could stop some of this.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to share any snippets of conversations you heard from people at the event on Saturday? I know you're a facilitator, so you were floating around a lot, probably watching other people have all these conversations. But yeah, do you want to share anything about like what were people's responses to the event and to this artwork, especially when we're talking about how can it facilitate dialogue?
Yeah, I on the way home, I was talking to Nate. I was like, it's kind of like being at your own wedding. Like, it's like, you know, you just want to say hi to everybody and be kind and try to, like, not fall apart. And just trust that they're all having good conversations with each other. So I talked to a lot of people for very brief amounts of time.
I get that completely.
Yeah, so I heard a lot of positive things. And I one thing I will say is I heard a lot of positive feedback from all the artists. And I think that was important. A number of people who were showing work that hadn't done something that big before, or you know, that was a stretch for them, or they were feeling vulnerable, and yeah, and that they felt really good about the whole show, the whole event, and yeah, and each other, I guess, a lot of positivity for each other. So that felt really important to me too. I think that the art show was something that helped all of the artists feel a little more confident going forward and putting themselves out there.
Which again goes back to what you were saying earlier about building power mm-hmm. and
yeah.
empowering people through invitations to contribute
yeah.
what they can.
Yeah, so that feels really good to me.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about all the different kinds of artwork that you've done. And as we heard at the beginning of this episode, you're a musician, a fiddler, you're a singer, and then obviously you're also a potter and fiber artist. Can you tell us a little bit more about how your art informs your work as a farmer and community organizer and vice versa?
Maybe going back to that, the practice of being a maker or a creator, mm-hmm. I don't know how I got to be like that, if that was how I was raised, or if it's the practices of doing those things mm-hmm. that helps me have that mindset. But it is life-giving to me. It is something that gives me joy. It is something that calms me, you know, when I'm stressed. But I also just have this mind, I think, that is like constantly imagining and then trying to do.
That's great, actually. Because my next question, kind of follow up to that, which I think maybe you've already answered, is like, why is your artistic practice important to your climate advocacy work? And I don't know if that's partially this idea of that climate advocacy work can be stressful, and having a way to, like we talked about earlier, imagine a better future and kind of create spaces for hope. And if your artistic practice is life-giving, kind of how it can replenish.
Yeah. I'm this kind of person who I feel like even if I have, well, I've been reading a lot of fiction lately, so that's what I've been doing recreationally, I guess. But I feel like even the things that I do for fun maybe would fall into the category of work.
Mm-hmm.
If you were like me and define work as seeing either a problem or something that you want to happen and then like imagining and trying to figure something out and then putting some effort in and seeing what happens and then maybe adjusting and trying again. I mean, you know, so I'm like, oh, playing music, it's kind of like work, and farming is like work, and, you know, making a rug or making pottery or, and I like, you know, even socially, I like doing work with people.
Yeah.
So I guess I feel like the same is true for advocacy or working for change. It's like imagining something different and putting forth effort, whether by yourself or with others. So it's kind of, it just all seems like the same, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like what medium are you working in?
Yeah.
Or what, you know, what skills do you have? But it's all kind of the same, like imagining and then trying to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about how even if they're all connected, like you said, it can be challenging to balance all of these roles or all these different mediums for doing work and all of these work that's really meaningful in all of these different kind of capacities. What have you learned about this process of finding balance? Even if you're not there yet.
No, this is the question I thought you were going to ask me about. And I have no idea. No idea how to find balance.
Have you learned anything that you want to share?
That it's not like a fixed thing, mm-hmm. you know, and that you can't do everything you want to do. I can't do everything I want to do. Maybe you can. I can't. I want to do so many things, and I'm excited about doing so many things, and I care about doing so many things, and I want to talk to so many people, and I want to listen to so many people, and I care about so many people, and I want to have, I want to be friends with everybody, and you just can't do it. So what have I learned? To be patient with myself and to like trust maybe the longer picture or the bigger picture. I mean, it's been tough. Like since I started farming on, you know, not just like working on other people's farms, but like, you know, kind of trying to make a farm work. You know, I've written like one song in 15 years when I used to write a lot of songs, and I played in three bands, and now I sometimes play in one band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of things that I can't do as much of as I want to, but also to be like, okay, I haven't stopped being a musician. I'm not spending as much time being a musician, and that doesn't mean like I'm never going to. Might be another time in my life when that's like one of my top priorities, and maybe just to kind of trust that, I don't know, that it all fits together somehow. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and also to trust that like it's important to take care of myself, and I don't know, yeah, to have friends. It's important mm-hmm. to have friends, and yeah, to let other people take care of me. And
yeah, especially when you're, seems like you talked about your role as a facilitator and you've created these spaces and all of that and how you're taking care of other people and doing your best to take care of the land and like create systems and structures that can allow us to do that, that there has to be balance in that way too.
Yeah. And it, you know, living in the country, living a rural life is, and being a farmer, it's isolating, it's lonely. It's, you know, more logistically difficult to do social things mm-hmm. and yeah, and to not ignore that, like just because it's harder doesn't mean like I should be alone all the time or
yeah,
and just because maybe I'm working with people all day and facilitating lots of great things doesn't mean I don't need to just go hang out with my friends.
Exactly. That's, I think, important to hear, especially if I know a lot of the interviewees on this podcast series and maybe several of our listeners too are also like figuring out how to juggle, as you put it, a lot of different mediums of mm-hmm. doing doing the work that really matters, but also maybe recognizing that one of those mediums needs to be finding ways to replenish and be taken care of, not just caring for.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Speaking of systems and structures, you've told me about how Mustard Seed works to be a beautiful, safe, welcoming place for people to experiment with systems. Mm-hmm. Economic, agricultural, social systems that are more just. In order to address climate change and work toward climate justice, we are going to have to reevaluate these systems on a broader scale, too.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how you think the kind of artistic, creative, local work that Mustard Seed is doing can help us push for climate policy.
I do think it can. I do think that advocating for policy change is super important. And I don't think it's my top work as my own person, but I absolutely, you know, I think I'm part of, you know, I guess I feel like I'm part of a lot of movements that are working on that, and that it is my job personally to just support them, to encourage them, to, you know, to maybe uplift them. Yeah, I think it is my job to maybe support people in finding their power, in finding their voice, in finding their relationships with our planet and with each other. Yeah, and encouraging them to keep fighting this fight. And I think that our farm does that. And I think, I mean, yeah, and I think sometimes we, you know, are going to the protests, or sometimes we're just sending food to the protests.
Right.
I mean, I'm definitely more of a fan of direct action than, I don't know, than of letter writing.
But it's like so I use the word local to describe the work that Mustard Seed does, because it seems to be very focused on, like, what is our community here and what can we give to it? Mm-hmm. And everything you're talking about the way that the systems of the farm work and the systems of the community that you've created work, then it seems to be very much about figuring out who has what skills, stories, assets to offer, and giving people encouragement and confidence and support to do that. Like you said, that you've created a space that facilitates opportunities for people to figure out how they can advocate in their own way, whatever that might be. So maybe through direct action, maybe through letter writing, maybe through creating the food that helps sustain the people who are doing that other work. So that's actually, I hadn't thought about it in that way, but that's, I think, really important to remember, that when we're talking about something like, how do you push for climate policy, that that's not just in one way. It's creating communities where we can help each other figure out how to contribute in the ways that mesh best with the skills we have to offer, what we're passionate about, what we feel like we have the capacity to give to. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Okay, so as we are wrapping up our conversation, you have shared so much wonderful information and, you know, I would say wisdom about how to start shifting the systems that we're in a way that is hopeful and inspirational and, you know, thoughtful and caring, which I think is really wonderful to hear and makes me feel just more confident in the community that I'm in to hear that these things are happening. So what are the three key ideas that you want people listening to understand about your work that's at this intersection of art and farming and organizing and climate action?
Okay, I did think about this. So here's here's my three things. So one of them is cooperation. And then one of them is making time and space for what gives you meaning. And the other one was coming back to that everyone matters. So then I'll have a few sentences on each one of those. Okay, so cooperation, one is just for me and for you, if you want, is just that, yeah, you don't have to do it all. You don't have to think of everything. Just to like join with what other people are already doing, having friends, supporting other efforts. I think that being humble is part of cooperation and community. So that's that one. So making time and space for what gives you meaning. For me, that is community and function and beauty. I like to make beautiful things that are also useful. I also think that that is helpful for an ecological economy, is to make things that are beautiful and useful. But that's something that I love doing. I also love being outside and just lying on the ground and looking at the sky. And so I sometimes work really hard sometimes and I don't have a lot of time, but just even taking a few minutes to just lie down and look at the sky can calm and center me. So anyway, I guess that, yeah, you don't have to do everything, and to make sure that, yeah, that you create some space to do the things that are meaningful and that you love. And finally, that everyone matters and everyone is creative. Yeah, for me, that means to listen to everybody and, yeah, be humble again and to be amazed by everybody. But, yeah, also that, yeah, we all have power. We all can make a difference. And, yeah, that we don't have to do everything.
Great.
Wait. And love. I forget about love. Love was part of my one about making space for things to give me meaning. Yeah. Sorry. Function, beauty, love. Anyway, sorry. That was going to be like my nice end cap. Like we started off with love and then I finished with love and I'm like really cheesy.
There will be a way to get that in there. I'll make a note. And so with these takeaways from the work that you do, what is the biggest recommendation you have for others who might want to use artistic strategies to talk about climate change, especially in agricultural communities?
Well, I feel like I live in quite a white, rural agricultural community. And I think a lot of agricultural communities are probably fairly homogenous and have maybe been there for a while and maybe a little wary of outsiders. And I also think that there's a lot of defensiveness in farming. I think a lot of farmers just care a lot about what they're doing. They care a lot about their land. They care a lot about their families. They want to make money that, you know, help their kids have a better life. I think a lot of us are buying into the, you know, the economic myths and the things we're learning from our ag universities and our big corporations. And I think a lot of farmers are defensive about, regenerative agriculture and organic farming. And yeah, so I don't know what I want to say. I want to say don't start off by picking a fight. But maybe that's the wrong. Maybe you start off by picking a fight if you want. I mean, that I think that, you know, think that's important too. Somebody should be doing that too. We should try everything. We should try everything wherever we are. You know, for me, I've been, you know, trying to make friends, trying to find common ground. That's a lot of what I try to do, is try to find the common ground to build a little bit of relationship before kind of digging into some of the harder stuff. But I think culture is powerful, and that partly what the power of the arts is, that we can tap into culture. We can create culture, but we can tap into this culture that's been with us, and that's in our food, and that's in the way we relate, that's in our music, that's, you know, it's in all of our arts. And so, yeah, tapping into that taps into people's memories, into their hearts and their history. And some of that is painful and some of it's terrible and some of it's beautiful. But I think sometimes it can help people, you know, engage and think about things. Yeah, I don't know. Use culture to make new culture.
Thank you so much, Alice. for all of those takeaways and recommendations. Really, thank you. Speaking of, also, as we've discussed throughout this entire episode, the importance of community and connecting with the work that's happening in your community and learning from each other and all of that, how can people listening connect with you and your work?
Yeah, we have a website, and I think Vivian's going to put some of this on somewhere.
Yes, it will be on the website for sure.
So the farm has a website. I do not have my own website. I have a old Instagram account that got hacked, and I've got a new Instagram account that has like six little things in it. But yeah, the farm is much easier to engage with on the interworld. But also, you should come see us once it starts to be springtime. So starting in May, we will have pretty regular harvest days, and we will have events, and we will have workshops, and we might have some potlucks and parties. Yeah, so come see us. That's what I recommend.
Definitely. And I got the chance to go see the farm for the first time a few weeks ago, so I hope to make it out there too and to see you again and talk more and see more about the wonderful work that you're doing. So thank you so much again for joining, Alice, and for all of the incredible, thoughtful spaces and conversations that you help create in this community here.
Well, thanks. And thanks for having a fun podcast project about art and farming and climate change.
Thanks for making it fun. It's people like you who make it possible.
Thank you for listening to The Art of Climate Dialogue, and we hope you'll listen to the rest of the series. More information about podcast interviewees is available at ecotheaterlab.com. We invite you to engage in conversation with us by leaving a comment, responding to the short feedback form in our show notes, and checking out the Eco Theater Lab's website. We want to thank all of the organizations and individuals who made this series possible. This project is funded by both a North Central Region Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education Program graduate student grant, which is supported by the USDA's National Institute of Food and Agriculture, and a Johnson Center for Land Stewardship Policy Emerging Leader Award. This episode's sound technician was Lane Larson. Our podcast consultant is Mary Swander. Our podcast musician is Omar DeCook-Mercado. And our podcast artist is Mosel Nita Singh. Our podcast land acknowledgement is adapted from text developed by Lance Foster and Sakawis Nobis and from conversations with Shelley Buffalo. Rosie Marcoux-Rowe is our podcast editor, and I'm Vivian M. Cook, Community Engagement Director for the Eco Theater Lab and the Art of Climate Dialogue podcast producer and host. Take care.